I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, Steve Craddock. Yep, Steve Craddock. Steve Craddock of Ocean Colour Scene. Steve Craddock of Paul Weller's Band. Steve Craddock of The Specials. Steve Craddock of putting together the new P.P. Arnold album. Steve Craddock of straight up everything. He's the master plate spinner and also a really nice dude. And it'd been a while since I'd last seen Steve. We touch on the fact we've got a mutual pal in former guest James Buckley. And Steve's not only played in Ocean Colour Scene at my nightclub, but has also come down and spun some records as well. So it's a great chat. And needless to say, somebody with such an incredible career has got some great music chat in him. Before we get on to that chat, I just want to say thank you to Squibbies Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Also, thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. And also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track podcast, go and have a look in the archives, because there's about 150 episodes now with some of your favourite musicians, producers, DJs, comedians, actors. They're all in there, and we touch on things like acid jazz in this chat. Eddie Pillars got an episode in the back catalogue. Obviously, Steve done some work with Liam in the 90s as well, and we speak. I've got an episode there with Andy Bell from Oasis and Ride. So, go and have a rummage in the archives, because I'm sure you'll find some episodes in there to get your teeth stuck into. And if that's not enough, I also have a Patreon page where I put a standalone episode up over there just for Patreons each week. You can find out all about everything at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Right, I'm done talking. Let's get on with today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with the wonderful Steve Craddock. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing, www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, And then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15. BEAT15. And that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we're recording. Sitting up has hit me today in possibly the best background I've done yet with a guest. He's Steve Craddock. How you doing, Steve?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah.
So, before we get on to the podcast, I just want to kind of ask you how you've been finding the situation that we're in as both a human, you know, and a husband and father, as well as a creative.
Well, the shitter about everything is that we're not, you know, we should be on the road now.
Yeah.
I should be playing with the Paul Weller group. But it is what it is, you know, it's taken out of our hands. So it's kind of, it feels like, you know, you hear stories about people having gap years, don't you, when they go to university or something, and it feels like a gap year for a 50-year-old, you know, which is too late in life. But, I've got my family here, which has been great. I've been hanging out with my boy Cass and Sunny, my daughter.
Is this down in Devon?
In Devon, yeah.
Lovely, lovely.
And I've been able to record, thankfully. I've been doing some recordings with Paul Weller's daughter, Leah.
Nice.
I've also been, not recording, but I've been mixing a girl called Yasmin Kiddle. I've been working with her for a couple of years now, and she's been putting out a track each month of this year. So there's 6 tracks out on Spotify or the download sites where you can listen to that stuff. It's been great.
So have you found that kind of key to kind of ticking over, being able to sort of immerse yourself in the creative side of what you do?
It's kind of the same as what I would normally do, if I'm honest, apart from the fact that I'm not out on the road.
Yeah.
It's what I do is sort of sit in my den and make music with people.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get on to the track listing. And I should say that for people that are listening, that obviously I've met you several times before, Steve. We've got a mutual friend in James Buckley, and got to see you perform at his wedding in a big castle in Scotland, which was pretty cool. And you've come down and spun records at my club as well. And I believe Ocean Colour Scene played the club as well in the early days.
I think we played it in 1991.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we might have played it a couple of times.
Nice. All right, Steve. Well, for track one, I want to know what you think is the song with the greatest ever intro.
Right. Which is, firstly, it's a very difficult question, that is, because there's so many. But I'm gonna go with a song by Dusty Springfield called Mr. Dream Merchant.
Wonderful record.
Good. I'm pleased you know it. Yeah. the intro is... it's heavenly light, isn't it? It starts with that harp, and then it's got this beautiful drum roll. I'd love to know who played the drums on that.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful.
I watched, did you watch the recent documentary on Dusty that was on BBC?
No.
Oh, it was amazing. And it was so...
BBC, man, I don't watch all that. I don't watch that shit, man.
Do you not?
Ah.
Like, it was something really interesting about Dusty that I never knew. And it was the fact that all of the big dramatic kind of wrist flicks and that when she'd perform, was apparently she'd have lots of the lyrics written on her wrist.
And if I thought he was going to say a line of gear.
Yeah, just straight off the wrist. Well, apparently, yeah, she had loads of the lyrics on there.
She didn't know her words. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I should watch it. Actually, is it on that catch-up thing?
Yeah. It's an interesting story. She was definitely a troubled soul, Steve.
I hear that. Yeah. But I really love 60s stuff, you know.
Oh, it's incredible. So in regards to intros, I always ask musicians this, and for, you know, looking at the work you've done with Ocean Colour Scene, like, you know, especially when the band sort of exploded, like, you know, so many iconic intros, like, has the way that you approach songwriting changed from back when the band started, Steve, to now, because the fact that the industry's changed so much in the way that people listen to music, you know, they're not necessarily record buyers anymore. There's lots of people streaming. Do you see what I'm saying with the question? I just want to know, like, how you approach the songwriting, an intro, you know. Do you still write for radio? Well, is that a consideration?
No, we never did that anyway. We started it just... that's what flowed and that's what came naturally to us.
Yeah.
And we kind of did it enough, really. I don't know how many more intros, or maybe I just didn't have enough after that, do you know what I mean? But there was a few on the first two albums that worked. And then we kind of, you feel you're just repeating that thing if you kept doing that, you know?
Yeah.
So the intro stopped after that, really.
Yeah.
And then we just we would just play Simon songs.
Yeah.
I think even by, I don't know if you know a song called July, but I think even by then, I think Simon was getting irritated by the riff intro, you know.
Really?
Yeah, which is fair enough, I think. Yeah. We've done enough of it.
Okay. Track two, Steve. I want to know what the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
I've also got a few more, if you don't mind me going
on. The intros, you want some honourable mentions? Yeah. Throw them in, mate. Throw them in.
I was thinking about So Sad About Us by The Who, which is such a, in a way, a simple, I guess, it's just really just the D-shaped chord playing three different notes over it. I think that's a classic intro. And in the same way, which is quite similar, is Feel a Whole Lot Better by The Byrds.
Mm.
That's got that sort of jangle. But I think is really beautiful and memorable emotive intros. And a recent new one is by a rap artist called Leaf Dog. It's a track called Some People Say. And I don't know how he's done it. I think he's incredible, Leaf Dog. It sounds like some old 50s record intro. It's really dramatic. Really, I don't even know if he sampled it or whether he would have replayed it. I don't know.
Well, I've not heard that, but we do put a Spotify playlist to accompany this podcast, so I'll make sure that that's...
You know, for yourself, it's really, really special, I think.
Oh, I'll check that. So for track two, Steve, I want to know what the first song you remember hearing was that had an emotional impact on you.
It would have been the B-side of Bitterest Pill by The Jam, which is a song called Pity Poor Alfie.
Oh, right, okay.
And I think that came out in either 81 or 82. And it was just my girlfriend at the time, she was playing it. And it just really connected with me. And for many years, even I play it a lot still, you know, but for many years that I would have to play that tune every morning. And I still don't really know why. It's one of those things, isn't it? It's not worth knowing why, I think.
So what, you don't really know what that emotion was?
No, just, you know, it kind of had to stay with me forever then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of those mind-blowing moments.
How old would you have been then, Steve?
11.
Okay. And so where was that? Where was you born?
In a place called Solihull in the West Midlands.
Okay. And so growing up, Steve, like, aside from what you was hearing, man, sort of girlfriends and things like that, was there music on at home?
I think so. I can't really remember. I mean, my mum and dad had really shit sort of like Christmas albums. And I'll tell you what they had, right? When they got their first car cassette player, it would have been... there was a Darts Greatest Hits. When at the time, I mean, I'm on about when I was kind of a 6, 7, 8 year old.
Yeah.
I ended up loving all those songs. But, you know, when you get to a certain age, you realise that they're absolute shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was a Mamas and the Papas greatest hits, which I still really love them.
Yeah.
And since, you know, you find out that people like the Wrecking Crew all played on their records, you know, really well-played records, great vocal arrangements.
Yeah.
And I think great songs, even if they were covers, you know, they were great versions of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that, and there was a Shadows greatest hits.
Did that...
I thought was great, you know.
Was you obsessing over music at a young age, Steve?
Yeah, I was. Sort of youth club Friday night discos were really important things, and everyone. And then it was kind of segregated. Really, there was lots of different scenes around that time, wasn't there? There was some weird sort of rockabilly. You know, the mod revival. Mm. You'd have the ska revival. There'd be loads of rockers around in the West Midlands. That was a big scene for some reason, which I still don't get.
Yeah.
And it was. And then it became kind of, you know, when you realise how shit school is, it becomes a salvation, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So I started getting groups together, you know. I wanted to learn. It blew me away. Groups like UB40, you know, were coming out with 1 in 10 and Tyler and, you know, kind of really important tunes, I thought.
It's so weird that you mention that, because I think so many people mock UB40 for some of the stuff that come later in their career. You should never overlook the importance of that early stuff, like songs like 1 in 10, and fucking Tyler's an incredible tune, man.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think their first three albums are amazing. Mm. I think and their dub album they did, Present Arms in Dub, I thought was great.
Mm.
And it was all mixed just down the road from us by a guy called Bob Lamb.
Yeah.
Where we ended up renting a room from. So we had lots of stories, and he still had the 4-track mixing desk. Apparently he had 2 of them.
Yeah.
To mix when he was mixing the albums. And they'd mix it on like a PA system out in the back garden of a place in King's Heath.
And so... would you have access to go and see them at like, but I take it they were playing like Hare and Hands and places like that back then?
No, I'd be too young for that, really. I didn't see them. No, that's not true. I saw them at the Birmingham Odeon in, I think, 81 or 82. And I was right down the front, right? And Astro handed me, in those days, they used to do half pint lagers, the Carlsberg lagers. Shitty little things, but I got handed one of them, you know, and I remember going to school the next day still deafened by it all, and the vibration of the bass, and it was overwhelming, you know.
Yeah. When you was sort of listening to music, aside from obsessing it, was you deconstructing it at all, Stephen, sort of working out how songs were put together?
Yeah, I'd learned the sax parts off the Signing Off album on this shitty little guitar I had, and then I started playing the bass. So, yeah, I'd try and work out the different parts in it.
Okay.
But it wasn't until I started dabbling in acid with one, you know, you go through that sort of scene, don't you? Mm. And it was that made me sort of think, wow, you know.
Yeah.
All the colours that are in music.
Yeah.
And it was a scene I'm pleased I didn't hang around too long with, to be honest with you, because I know people who got really fucked up through it.
Yeah.
You know, saw the other side of it all, which was fun.
You touched on school a moment ago. And so for track 3, Steve, I'm going to ask you what song reminds you of your time at school.
Well, there's a couple I've thought of here.
Okay.
I remember when Being With You by Smokey Robinson entered at number one, and we were all in the playground listening to it on the radio. And so that kind of reminds me of it. And also, a shitty song is Stand and Deliver by Adam and the Ants.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, everyone had to know all the words to that tune.
Yeah. So was you not one of the lads that thought Adam Ant was cool then growing up?
No, my sister liked Adam Ant.
Yeah.
No.
For me, it was so weird. In my school, it was like, you either... there was three choices, really. It was either I guess Adamant, Weller, or Suggs, and you know, and I was a Madness fan. Like, I think
they were amazing. Madness had such an amazing run of singles, and their record sounded great as well, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's just I think they're. I've said it many times on this podcast that I think they're not acknowledged for what they've done. I think that because maybe the kind of novelty value of their videos and that might have kind of made people not necessarily realize the importance of records like Embarrassment coming out at the time it did. You know, they were it was some smart social commentary in what Madness was doing.
Yeah, but you know what? All that recognition bollocks is, I think the people who love them, and
yeah,
you know, if you don't, then you don't deserve to.
Yeah,
I mean, what is recognition? Would that mean like a blue plaque in Camden?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I mean,
you know, you get to a certain age, they might think, oh, something like that is nice, but you know, yeah, they know that, you know, they do Madstock, and
yeah,
I think they know their worth.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. It is. It's those that know their worth. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's known full well that
it's the fans that make all that happen anyway,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
People they speak to through their music.
Okay, so in regards to school, Steve, I mean, you mentioned earlier that music started to overtake it. Then, so was you not a fan of school? Did you not enjoy it?
I don't think anyone is, are they? If you're a fan of school, you're weird. No, I wasn't. No, I mean, it's. And a teacher that identifies with you. But how can you. It's a tough job, isn't it? How can you possibly inform that many different.
Yeah, yeah.
Possible thankless task, isn't it? And unfortunately, most of them are idiots as well, although they were. Is unstable.
Did
your computer just told me I'm unstable?
Was it my computer, or was that your own conscience talking to you, Steve? And the voice is in your head again, mate. That'd be that acid. Yeah. Did you have a good circle of mates at school?
No, not really. Can't remember. I didn't, you know, I hang out with people who wanted to play music,
yeah,
or who listened to music.
So at school, was that what you wanted to be? Musician?
Yeah.
Done all right then.
Well, I'm lucky enough to still be playing music, you know, yeah, and I'm thankful for that. But, you know, especially at an early age, you kind of have to be a... Well, you just... It takes you, doesn't it? It's a calling, I think. And from that onwards, you always have to, from that moment onwards, you see that that's your path, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't feel, it gives you an elitist thing. Which to feel like that at my age would be stupid and rude, right?
Yeah.
But at that age, at a younger age, it's a good thing and it builds up, you know, your identity.
Was you a confident kid then?
No. I'm still not confident. But, you know, it's, you know.
Did you like the attention that being in a band brought you?
There's a part of that, isn't there? I mean, you'd have to go, you know, you'd have to go and see a shrink for all that shit.
Mm.
There's, what is it? Is it, you know, it's you've got to have some ego, and yet you don't think you've got any ego. You know,
yeah.
And who wants to work all that bollocks out?
Yeah. Just do it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right. Track 4, Steve. First song you remember buying from a record shop?
Was Beat Surrender by The Jam. It wasn't a record shop, actually. I think it was W.H. Smith's.
Yeah.
They used to sell singles.
Yep.
And which was the last Jam single.
Mm.
And so from then on, I'd heard a couple of tracks, as I said earlier. From then on, I bought, when I had the money, I would buy all of their albums, and I spent many years just listening to, well, it was The Jam and Elvis Costello, who was, again, probably before my time, you know.
Yeah.
Just before my time.
I mean, do you ever have these, like, moments of reflection where you think, right, the first record I bought, I'm now, you know, spent many, many, many years standing next to this guy playing these records.
It sometimes comes back to me.
Yeah.
But normally too busy, it's, you know. Also, how many times can you keep thinking of that?
Yeah, of course, of course.
Mad, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But and also, Paul's... It's amazing that he's so prolific still, you know, and hasn't lost that mojo that he's got. So to be around that is really more exciting than that thought that you're talking about.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I guess that's way more inspiring. And so, I mean, how did, I mean, obviously I'm aware of like the everything that you've done with Ocean Colour Scene, but from doing that and the band establishing itself, how do you manage at that point to be in Paul's band as well? How does that work? Like, how did that come about?
We supported the Ocean Colour Scene, supported him on his Paul Weller Movement gigs. We had two gigs with him, and then we used his studio. We were working with Jimmy Miller, who produced Traffic and Spencer Davis Group and the Stones. And I met him then. I bought a scooter off him actually when I was at the studio, which was cool. And he recognised me from when I went down to the studio as a younger kid. As a fan, and I don't know, he was looking to get a second guitar player, and he thought I would be all right with it. And at the time, we were all back on the Enterprise Allowance scheme, which is, you know, was a great thing at the time. You know, it allowed musicians and creative sorts to carry on doing what you're doing. So we were going through that. So it kind of. He just thought that I would be an appropriate guitarist,
yeah.
Which, you know, really surprised me because I knew that I was nowhere near good enough for that. But I learned quickly, you know, and yeah, that's it, really.
So how do you find kind of getting the, you know, as the balance something that, because, you know, you mentioned producing the artist, at the beginning of the podcast, and obviously, you know, Ocean Colour Scene are always actively out and about and touring, and obviously as is Paul, and specials as well. Like, you're master plate spinner, really, ain't you, Steve?
What?
You're a big plate spinner.
Yeah, it was kind of the last couple of years were pushing my luck, really, I guess.
Yeah.
But it... I didn't want to let anyone down. Also,
yeah. So how did the specials gig come about?
Horace and Linville tell me that they saw me playing with Paul. I think Paul was on the bill, the same bill as the specials. I think it was maybe in Italy,
mm-hmm.
and they just earmarked it. I think that there was maybe some issues with Roddy,
mm-hmm.
or Roddy had with the group, and they just kind of checked me there and. I just got a call from their manager, Steve, who's a Brummy guy, right? And I thought it was one of my old Brummy mates taking the piss, so I put the phone down. Just quite amusing.
So how has that been?
It's great, you know. I mean, again, the specials are a group that I grew up with. We all did if we were of that generation. Mm. And they're a really important group, you know. And so... I was just blown away, really, that I was being asked to come and play with them. And then when I play with them, it's, you know, they were so friendly, you know, so accommodating. And it's, you know, it was a dream.
Wonderful. I'm loving the fact that you're definitely in some rural places down there. I can hear chickens, I'm sure.
We've got a cockerel outside, yeah. He's a cunt, man. He keeps biting. He does this sort of sideways shuffle like does that to you. You can't tell whether to run or if he's just checking you out, but normally he just bites you.
All right, brilliant. Track 5, Steve. The song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Right, well, it would be, there's a couple of them actually, but there was this great club in Birmingham. It was in the basement of a place called the Institute in Digbeth,
mm-hmm.
called the Sweat Club. And it was really, again, it's quite a short-lived thing, really. It's like anything, you know, it lasted for a couple of years before the E's started to turn nasty. It's quite strange, isn't it? But the songs were, there was Matha by the, was it again, it's the Dave Pike set. You know, it's kind of Indian vibes.
Indian vibes, know? Yeah. So can I ask you a question on that, Steve?
Yeah.
So is Weller anything to do with that?
Well, him and Marco, and I think it was Crispin from Galliano on drums, they did a version of it, but this is the original.
Yeah.
This is the original version. I'm not sure what year it was done. But there was this great DJ called Cheese Dip who would play Matha, and then over the top he would do the I Have a Dream speech.
Nice. By Martin Luther King. Because there's a huge intro on that as well, isn't there? Just the sitar before it drops.
Yeah, yeah. So it would be that tune, or it would be Red Light Spells Danger by Billy Ocean.
Oh, what a record. What a record. Yeah. The energy in that record, it just powers along, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Really brilliant. And there was a great scene there, you know, as well. There was a great scooter scene, and it was sort of like the outgrown scooter scene. It was... Everyone just was really cool, I think, you know, proper flared cords, woolly hats on, everyone dancing great, man.
So with this really being cool. Kind of what, 88, 89?
No, it would have been like 90, it was later than that.
Mm.
We didn't, it was kind of, I was into like the Roses and the Lars in 89.
Right. So would this have been the time of like the acid jazz stuff kicking off?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Talking Loud and all that.
Yeah, it was. And in fact, it went up to sort of 95, really. Say, from 93 to 95.
Okay.
Because we all used to, when we was making Mosley Shoals, we'd go down after we'd been spending the day rehearsing and recording. Mm. We'd go down there on the night. We took Brendan there. I think, in fact, Paul came and played there once. With us all.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So, if you want to hear the songs, just go over to...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spotify and search Off The Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through. And you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. So I want to ask you just about how you coped when that album dropped, you know, at a time when there was so much emphasis on British guitar music, and you were right in the thick of it. Like, how did you deal with that? How did, you know, fame and celebrity and you know, being on, you know, the TV and being on Top of the Pops, and also I'm going to ask you that as well. How was playing on Top of the Pops?
It was amazing. It's weird, isn't it? Because that's what you grow up listening to. It's a big thing, you know, when we were growing up, Top of the Pops, wasn't it?
Massive. And,
yeah. But the thing is, we would we'd just abuse ourselves, you know, really. And I don't know why we did it, because we thought it was fun, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone was getting totally fucked up. And
yeah.
And I kind of spent sort of like, you know, a good 20 years smashing my head against the wall, you know. But at the time, really loving it, you know.
Yeah.
And, I think that's how most people deal with it, because it's surreal. It's a load of bollocks at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's nothing, isn't it? But it's kind of what gets you into music in the first place, you know, that whole thing. But it's a double-edged sword if you're not careful, you know. You got to keep yourself in check. Most of us didn't.
Yeah. Just to touch on the Top of the Pops thing again, like to see that peep behind the curtain, because, you know, again, as you said, for someone, you know, like me as well, it was like Top of the Pops was just the highlight of the week. It was the only time you got to see your musicians on television. It just never happened aside from that. So I always just wonder what the actual, you know, actually getting on there is like. Is it a disappointment when you see behind the curtain of it, or is it everything you'd imagined it to be? Like, well, and was the first time Ocean Colour scene for you?
Yeah, it was the Riverboat song.
Wicked.
And we just had to mime, right? No, it was a backing track. Simon, I think, had to do a lead vocal. So from the morning, we got out of bed and just got on it. you know, it's just... And then after you've done it a couple of times, this is what it is. People love it at first, musicians or the singers, do you know what I mean? And then they start going, oh, they're pushing the crowds around. After about the fourth time, it becomes blasé.
Yeah.
And then they start, you know, oh, they're pushing the crowd around because, you know, that's what they do to, you know.
Okay.
I mean, for fuck's sake, they used to have Jimmy Savile doing it, you know what I mean? I'm sure there's worse things going down.
Yeah, you definitely want people pushing the crowd away from him, mate. Fucking hell. I'm going to take you back to your home county, Steve, for track six, favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Well, I'm going to choose UB40, and I want to choose a song that's off the Present Arms album called Silent Witness.
Love.
Do you know that?
I don't know.
I don't think it's a really and it's not a kind of, it's not a big sort of chorusy tune, but you go and check it, Silent Witness.
Yeah.
There's something really, it just gets you, you know. And I don't know why. And I'm pleased I don't know why. But there's just something about Ali's voice, you know. He was such an incredible, and he's such an incredible singer. So I'm picking that tune.
Wonderful. It's a crazy story, and I mean it's the stuff of Hollywood films, the UB40 story. It's again, I watched a documentary a few years ago on them, and it's just tragic. Like the money that disappeared, like that's never been accountable for, and it shows like them in you know the kind of late 80s, early 90s where. You know, they looked like they were one of the biggest bands in the world. They were selling out these arenas, like, all over the world. And it's like, and they're bankrupt. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I know, but I think they had a few bad manager problems.
Yeah, that come across.
I don't even know the in and outs of it, you know, but it's awful. And then that made the group fall out. You know, it made three brothers not talk to each other for years, and you know,
that's the tragic sort of ending of it, really. When there's it's so weird. There's a third brother that's now singing in one UB40, and Ali's obviously still singing in another UB40. It's just, tragic, man. It's an awful end to a, you know, a great band.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Last track, Steve. You can play DJ here, mate. I want you to recommend a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Okay, I'd like to. It's off an album by a group called We Are Catchers. Have you heard of them?
I haven't. No.
He's from Liverpool, and I'd like to choose two songs off it. There's a song called If You Decide, and there's another song called Water's Edge.
Okay.
And they're both just timeless songs, I think. Classic. And I like the sound of the recording. And I believe Ian Brody was responsible for producing it.
Is it quite new then? Is it recent?
I think within the last 4 or 5 years.
Right.
But I don't think not many people are aware of it. But the songs, it sounds like it could still be in demo stages. But where you know when you've got the energy,
yeah,
and this I think Bill Ryder Jones, he might play guitar or drums even on some of the tracks.
Nice,
but those two songs I think are really great, and they seem to have slipped under the net.
Okay, so also recently, I forgot to touch on this, but I wanted to talk about how it was working with Pippi Arnold. How was that?
It was fantastic, amazing.
And how did that come about?
Well, we reconnected after I'd not seen her for about maybe 10 years. And we had about 6 demos that we did because she came to stay with me at my place in Birmingham for a little while. And we would just work on music on coming evening time. And so we had these demos anyway, ideas, and I found them. I moved house about 5 years ago, and I found all the reel-to-reels and listened to them, and I put them all onto digital audio and sent them to Pat to see if she wanted to sort of pick up where we left off, really. And she did, thankfully. And then we spent, from 2016, we spent about 2 years going through lots of Pat's demos, lots of ideas I had of songs to bring for the album. And these kept sort of we ended up as a double album, you know, it kept escalating. And I really love it. I've not listened to it for a while, but it was a joy to make. There was, you know, it's kind of a big production. I wanted to try them as a fan. I thought it'd be nice to see what her third album on Immediate could be like. That's where my mind was when we was trying to make it. And it was just made on this laptop I've got in front of me here, you know, in the studio, which is a garage, you know. So I'm really pleased with it. I think I think it's great.
Wonderful. So when this strange situation that we find ourselves in easy, Steve, and we get back to a different normality than what potentially, you know, perhaps we were used to, what's in the pipeline?
Just hit the road, Jack.
You're missing it.
I do miss it, yeah. But I think it's also good to, I think it's good in a way to, because it's so forced, I think it's giving everyone time to sort of collect their, collect what they are in a different way that no one would ever have this chance in life, I don't think.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more, mate.
So I think, make the best of it.
Absolutely. Steve, thank you so much for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
Welcome. Nice to see you.
Lovely. Thanks, mate. There you go. Steve Craddock. What a gent. Lovely to catch up with him. I'm just loving the fact that sometimes people have like kids running around, in the background or like the phone rings or something like that. A cockerel, like cock-a-doodle-dooing throughout. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, you couldn't see what I could see, but, where Steve was recording from looked incredible, like just racks of guitars and drum set up and stuff. It looked cracking. So yeah, thanks ever so much for listening. Thanks once again to Steve for giving up his time and having a music natter with me. I'm back next week. If you can't wait that long, have a look in the archives or go and have a look over on Patreon. Find out about everything at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Stay safe. See you next week. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. PodBibleMag.com. It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.